Welcome to the See You Next Summer podcast. I'm your host, Billy Pollyann, and with me, as always, is the Otis to my Lex Luthor, Mr. Raul Rodriguez. How are you doing, buddy?
I like it. I thought you were going to say that I was the Jimmy Olsen to your Clark Kent, but I like it. I feel good.
Well,
feel
that
good.
One works, too.
That all feels good. Yes, we're doing so good, you guys. Starting a new month. It's Billy's birthday.
So that basically means I can do whatever the hell I want.
Mm-hmm.
We you know this if you've been following for a long time. For our birthday months, we get to choose and do whatever we want.
And I used that chip very well last year.
And you're gonna use it well this year too.
Yes, too. Yes.
We're gonna conclude something this year. Mm-hmm. But for this month, it's all Superman. So if you don't like Superman, you might as well skip the entire month.
Mm-hmm. It's all Superman, baby.
Yeah, and we're starting with probably one of the most important films in superhero history.
Yes.
Just film history, really.
Mm-hmm.
With Superman, the movie.
Yes.
The is released in December of 1978. Directed by Richard Donner. And starring Christopher Reeve as Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Career defining in many ways.
Yes. And one of the most influential superhero movies of all time. And because it's always the debate between a lot of nerds, like what is the movie that started the superhero boom? So I'm like, well, technically Superman started it first. But then it took a break, and then technically it was the big boom, because then you get into the debate, was it X-Men or Blade in the 90s? And then you get to that debate. But still, though, Superman, the movie, when I was rewatching this before we get to the recap, I noticed that a lot of movies studied this formula of how to do a superhero movie. I remember stuff from Spider-Man 1. There's a lot of stuff that I remember from the first X-Men movie, too. Like, it established a formula.
A very simple formula. No, but it but did to a point where it's actually kind of frustrating that they stick to it. And for a long time, Superman has not evolved from that. Everybody wants to emulate these movies.
Yes.
And that's something about, like, I mean, even the music and stuff and, like, Superman fans, they always go back to this as, like, the gold standard, which is understandable. But at a certain point, you gotta evolve. You can honor the past, but you get, you know, it's not a good thing to live in the past. Past will eat you alive, and the future will save you.
And because it's a really good point, though, because you're seeing this as a comic book reader. Someone part of the public that only knows Superman as the movies. And so for me, like going back to the Man of Steel episode that we did a few years ago, I didn't mind Superman killing Zod. I'm like, well, this is a different interpretation of the character. I mean, like, he had to do it. But then also, or talking about when we get to that episode, Superman Returns, like, this is a direct sequel to the Christopher Reeve movies. I was like, ooh, like, this is interesting. And right now, because the thing that you said reminded me of that stupid decision that they made in the Whedon cut of putting the Superman theme with Harry Cavill. I'm like, no, you shouldn't do this. Yeah, but I also hoping that James Gunn will make it evolve, even though I have a dark feeling that he won't. But we'll see until the movie comes out. We'll see. But you know what they say about hope.
Really? Really? Okay. Well,
I didn't say the line, though.
Yeah, but you implied it. And, this starts out with a old-timey theater.
How old were you when you watched it? I'm curious.
Ooh, how old was I when I watched this? I was about, like, 7 or 8.
Okay.
Just about. So this was after Christopher Reeve had the accident. And okay. I didn't know about it at the time. Mm-hmm. But I think he was only like, he was close towards the end of his life, I think. Mm-hmm. But anyway, yeah, it starts June 1938. It's a child reading a comic book, mm-hmm. and it's about the Daily Planet, the largest newspaper in the city of Metropolis. And then the shot dissolves to the real Daily Planet, which I love that it's, they literally have like a globe that says Daily Planet and it spins. Mm-hmm. Something that they've put in multiple Superman media, from like mm-hmm. the animated series to even Lois and Clark had it.
Superman Returns had it too.
Then we get an unforgettable title sequence as it moves through space, and we get the blue letters and they mm-hmm. all fade out. And the John Williams score. And everybody knows the Superman theme. The I mean, really, it's one of the most famous pieces of music ever. And you immediately go like, oh, that's Superman.
Mm-hmm.
It's big and heroic, but also kind of like a god or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And then we get to, after the very long title sequence, it
5 minutes, like, I timed it.
Yeah, it goes for 5 minutes. There's a lot of people, but it's a good thing of
we
music.
We go to Krypton,
yes. And ignore the noise in the background, yes, those hooligans. But we also get another awesome piece of music with Krypton. And it's this crystal city planet with a red sun. And then we go through what I can only describe as the Vegas Dome. And we see that it is, there's a trial right now for three Kryptonians that tried to form a coup.
I was going to say an insurrection. Krypton.
Mm-hmm. Yes, an insurrection, and it's ruled by this council of elders. And
are they taking FaceTiming?
Basically.
Mm-hmm.
And the prosecutor is the planet's greatest scientist, Jor-El, mm-hmm. played by, first time we're ever talking about Marlon Brando.
Yep.
Considered one of the greatest actors of all time.
Stella!
It makes a lot of sense because Mario Puzo, the guy that made The Godfather,
mm-hmm.
did a treatment for this movie. Like, he came up with the story, which is crazy to think about.
Four screenwriters, including Mario Puzo. Like, damn.
The production of this movie is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And it went through a lot of hell. But I think it did pretty darn good.
Yes.
And Jor-El, you see, he has like the split curl and the white hair, which has become associated with the character, most famously parodied in like Megamind.
Yes.
And immediately you hear the way that he pronounces Krypton is Krypton.
Yes.
Which Krypton. Is very annoying, but it's very funny. But yeah, he has a director,
can you do it better, Marlon? I was like, nope.
Yeah, and so there's three people. There's the big guy, Nan, and he doesn't speak.
That is his name, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and then there's Ursa, who's the woman determined to exterminate men other than the man that she loves,
mm-hmm.
who is General Zod. He was the planet's former defense chief, played by famous British theater actor Terrence Stamp.
Mm-hmm.
He's gone on to do some other stuff, but I guarantee you have seen Terrence Stamp in something.
I mean, like, the last thing that he was in the movie Last Night in Soho.
He was, mm-hmm. but he's had a very long career. Mm-hmm. And they all say, guilty, guilty. And I also love that their, like, bars or whatever is just this big hula hoop that's going,
yes, like, woo. Devil must be anonymous, Jor-El. Join us. If you disagree as well, I offer you a chance, Jor-El, for greatness. One day you're about to be, even if it takes an eternity, or one of your heirs.
Yeah, and he's like, you alone will be responsible, and you alone I will blame.
Mm-hmm. And now, and look, so, how the chamber opens, and you know what it reminded me of?
Galaxy Quest?
When Tim Allen watches the thing in Galaxy Quest?
I thought that too. I was like, did Galaxy Quest steal from Superman?
Copy from this? Yes, I was like...
And what happens is they get sent to the Phantom Zone, which is essentially just a big... zone? The trapezoid mirror that traps them. And they go tumbling through space.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jor-El then talks with the people of Krypton, and they're all in like these like aluminum foil looking outfits.
The
idea of the Kryptonian crests on the chest, that was Marlon Brando's idea.
Oh.
So like he was the one that was like, that's why Superman has the S, because that's just the House of L. That's their family crest. And
oh, I thought it was Jor-El something from the comics. Okay.
Is saying it's been adapted into comics now. Now it's just part of the mythology. But Jor-El is saying, okay, the planet is going to explode. And these Kryptonians are such smug, arrogant assholes.
Mm-hmm.
To like the woman has like this smug face, which is just like, we just don't like your conclusions. We're not saying that they don't have merit. But I'm telling you that it's just shifting its planetary orbit. And Jor-El is just like, this planet's going to explode because the sun is going to explode. And he says, my friends, you know me to be neither rash nor impulsive. And yet they're still like, an act of defiance is insurrection. And he just goes, really? You think I'm going to be insurrection? All right, fine. I will listen.
He says, when you say something else, like, well, just cherish life is an act of insurrection. And I'm like, damn. Like, I love what they don't care about it.
Yeah, and he goes, very well, then neither I or my wife will leave Krypton. So what happens? He decides to send his baby, his newborn son, Kal-El, into the big the only way to describe it is the Scooby-Doo live action movie took from this thing, the spooky island, the disco ball.
No, you know what I was gonna say, because I had to bring that thing from Man of Steel. You know what the thing reminded me of? The ship, the Star of Bethlehem, because he did Jesus allegories. I was like, wait a damn minute. Like, is this Star of Bethlehem?
Yeah, and Superman's always had like these religious allegories and stuff. I mean, his story is basically Moses, but with aliens.
Mm-hmm.
And it is not lost to me that he was created by two Jewish teenagers. Mm-hmm. So obviously they did that. And I love that Lara, his wife, is just like, why Earth? Jor-El, they're thousands of years behind us. They're a primitive species. And of course, Jor-El goes, he will need that advantage. He'll be basically invulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
He will look like one of them. He will be strong. But he will be alone. He will never be alone. And I love how we saw this beautiful system of all of the crystals. It feels like a big organ. Like a big musical organ. And how he grabs some of the crystals, like, doon, doon.
It's also like, it's supposed to be like, that's all the knowledge in those crystals. He said, I will guide him. I will give him all the knowledge. Everything that I have, everything that I am, will go with him. And the thing about Marlon Brando was he was incredibly lazy when it came. He refused to memorize lines. So what he did in this scene in particular, famously, is when he's looking down at a sheet of paper that says the whole monologue. That he gives. It's a beautiful monologue too, about how he'll always be with his with Kal-El and everything. Favorite line is, the son becomes the father becomes the son. All that I have, all that I am, will travel with you, Kal-El, to the end of your days. And it's kind of beautiful where he's basically saying goodbye. And then they get shot up and they go out the same way Willy Wonka did with the Wonka Vader. Even the glass shattering is similar. With like the miniature.
It does.
There's a lot of use of miniatures with Krypton. And then suddenly you see the red sun is getting closer and closer and everything. And all the big crystal stalactites are falling down and it's pandemonium and everyone's dying. And all I just kept thinking was, I'm sure they very much regret ignoring Jor-El now.
I love that the whole, this one mini sequence of all of the people running in their aluminum foil outfits and how they're dying and falling, and it turns very red, like Suspiria, all of a sudden for 1 minute, as we see all the people like falling. I was like, it feels like people falling into hell. I was like, damn, this movie went hardcore. And I'm like, well, it's the 70s though. I love the whole thing about the color red and the shades and everything. I was like, God, I miss when these movies used to play a lot with color sometimes. It also depends on the director, though. And so I do like this sequence a lot. But also, this is the thing that I wonder about Kyle's ship trip. So was he hearing his father giving him like classes of Krypton's like backstory and also Earth's history while he was on traveling? Because you can hear his voice on the ship.
Pretty much. And he's sort of like in this stasis and he's still growing up. And now his hair is almost exactly like Jor-El, even with the big split curl.
Yes.
And the very obvious wigs that they were wearing.
Yes.
And then, well, that happens. Oh, yeah, they established that...
Also, technically, it was established that he traveled for like 3 years, right?
Yes, 3 years. Mm-hmm. And it apparently reached Earth in the year 1951.
Mm-hmm.
And then they plunges as a meteor in the middle of Smallville, Kansas.
Somebody yes. save me! And that's still 30 years later in the future.
Yep, and they are discovered by Jonathan and Martha Kent.
Martha!
And Jonathan, played by renowned Golden Age actor Glenn Ford. He was in a lot of good movies. Gilda with Rita Hayworth, the original 310 to Yuma. The guy has a pretty stacked filmography, like an all-American vibe to him, which is always what Pa Kent has. That's why I think the casting of Kevin Costner was perfect, because when you think of like an American actor, you think Kevin Costner. But yeah, they discover him, and this little naked kid, fully naked.
Oh, yeah.
Like super, it's the cover naked of the Nirvana album.
Mm-hmm. Hey, they got it from there.
They just decide, hey, we might as well adopt him.
I love how Mark Kench was like, we can say that he's one of the sons of my cousins, and he's
and
an
also
orphan.
There's the Martha Clark Kent, so that's where they got the name.
Yes,
and the kid, he stops the truck from going down on Jonathan as he was changing the tire, and also she says something about, oh, you heard what the doctor said. Watch your heart. Some good foreshadowing right there.
Oh, no. So technically, that thing you were saying before we record, technically, the little baby Clark, baby Superman, is doing the first cover of Superman, of him carrying a car.
Yeah, there's a lot of little homages to the Superman character, especially the golden age of comic books when he first was introduced.
Mm-hmm.
This feels more like a Silver Age, which was more like the 1950s, which is appropriate because this is supposed to be set during the 1950s. And then it just passes jumps. 15 years. Apparently, we go to a time jump and we get Clark as a teenager. And yeah, now his name is Clark Kent, named for Martha's maiden name. And he is a Smallville High water boy for the football team. And he likes this cheerleader, Lana, the redhead.
Yes.
And it's Christopher Reeve did the dubbing for this.
I was going to ask you that. I was like, did he do the dubbing? I was like, he sounds like Christopher Reeve.
Yeah, the actor that played Teenage Clark Kent did not know about that until the film was released.
Oh.
And we also see that Superman has a or Clark has a lot of power because he kicks the football into like the stratosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just runs home. He runs like a girl. I mean, it's very weird. He runs very weird, but he races against a train more powerful than a locomotive.
Mm-hmm. And the special edition, girls pass him.
Yeah, and in the special edition, that scene is actually the start of what I call the legacy casting.
Mm-hmm.
So in Superman media, typically one of the traditions that has happened is they cast actors from previous Superman products. Mm-hmm. And in this case, the man reading the newspaper was the first live-action Superman, Kirk Gallen, and the woman was Noelle Neal, one of the first Lois Lanes. And it's indicated that that little girl is Lois Lane, which makes absolutely no sense. So I understand why it was cut from the theatrical release. And then he gets home.
I get it.
And
I love that Clark is first, like, sees that Lana and the other guys. I was like, how you get here so fast? He's like, I just ran. I was like, I ran.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, you're a freak.
And I love that packing. I was like, are you like to show up, Clark? Is it showing up what I'm capable of? It's like, we were what we could do to you. I was like, you're here for a reason. I don't know whose. It's not here for you to score touchdowns.
And I was it's a very genuine father-son conversation where he's just like, mm-hmm. Look, whatever you do, we know that you're special.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, oh, I'm going to race you. And then he moves like a little bit. And then he grabs his arm and he just goes, oh, no.
I have to die now.
Yeah, and so he has a heart attack and he dies.
Mm-hmm.
This is typically what happens to Jonathan Kent in media. And I love mm-hmm. this. This is what I prefer because it shows that even someone as mighty as Superman can't trump life.
Yes, because I love the thing that he says, all those things that I can do and I couldn't even save him.
And then I think of the Robot Chicken sketch where he's trying to save him, like giving him mouth to mouth, and he just explodes his parts. Or he does chest compressions and he pushes too hard because obviously he's Superman, he's super strong. Mm. He's like, oh, sorry, Paul. It's ridiculous. But
also, Clark goes to the barn after this and sees one of the crystals shining. And I'm
it's the green crystal that Jor-El put in.
I was going to ask you that. So that's not kryptonite, right?
No, it is not kryptonite. It's just a green crystal. We know it's important.
Okay, so, and then for me, this is the weirdest product placement ever, where we see Martha Kent looking at his son at the end of the field with the sun going up, and puts a box of Cheerios, and then we see the box of Cheerios as she leaves the house. I'm like, this is the weirdest product placement ever.
Yeah, and that's all part of the special edition, which is a 2001 re-release with a lot of scenes that were cut from the theatrical. And it was approved by Richard Donner. I actually think the special edition is the definitive version because there's actually a extended cut, also known as the Salkind cut, after the producers Alexander and Ilya Salkin, because they had to buy the rights to Superman first, and that was a whole issue because they actually got it in 1973. They've been trying to get a mm-hmm. Superman movie for that long and went through a lot of directors, a lot of writers. It was in hell for a while. Anyway, yeah. I love also that he has the red plaid shirt, which is now mm-hmm. been adopted.
A staple. Mm-hmm.
A lot of the things that happen in this movie have just become part of the Superman mythos and are staples. Like time-honored traditions. Like the split mm-hmm. curl is a famous one. And then Clark reaches the North Pole, and then he takes the crystal and he throws it and he creates a giant crystal fortress that looks like Krypton.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Fortress of Solitude.
Yes. And then And then when he goes and he sees a lot of the more the crystals, and I was like, and then it forms the face of Jor-El. I was like, son, you don't remember me, but I do. Now you have been 18 years in this in your planet. But according to your plan, I have been there for 1,000 years. I know you have many questions. In this Fortress of Solitude, we will find answers together. Who am I? You're Kal-El, the last survivor of the planet Krypton. You're not one of them. You have great powers. Some of them you haven't even discovered. Son, you will be the source, or you will be the source of your power. You will know the concepts of immortality. You will study from these crystals. And this is the thing that I want to ask you. Did he say between all of the things that we've seen of him learning, was he in that Fortress of Solitude for 12 years?
Yes. And we get like the weird psychedelic
voiceover. Like the colors and the galaxies and all of the jumping. And like.
And it's for this reason, above all else, their capacity for good, that I sent them you, my only son.
And then I'm right there. And then I put in my notes, Christopher Reeve shows up until minute 48 of this movie.
Yeah, this is only a 2.5 hour movie, but like the first half hour, or like the first 20 minutes are in Krypton. Well, 10 minutes really, but we spend more time in Krypton than I thought that we did. But it's also because they let scenes breathe and just play out. Just builds atmosphere, which some people could say is boring, but other stuff, it's just like, keeps a nice, steady pace. And so now he's 30, and he has the outfit, the traditional blue outfit with the S, the red cape and boots, and the trunks. The red underwear. Yes, which I don't know why it's such a big deal for people that he has to have trunks. Why him? It's fine if Batman doesn't have trunks, but if Superman can't, I just don't get it, man. It's a double standard. Comic book fans are terrible.
I know.
Anyway, now
we're getting to New York City. I mean, Metropolis.
And it's now taking place in modern day, 1978. And we go to Metropolis, which is basically New York, and we go to the Daily Planet, and we see photographer Jimmy Olsen. He's just shooting photos and just a typical day. It's very busy reporter stuff. And we get introduced to Lois Lane, played by Margot Kidder. There's a lot of actresses up for this role, but also first, Christopher Reeve was chosen out of 200 actors that auditioned. Ooh. They got so desperate that Ilya Salkind even had his dentist audition. That's how desperate they were. They offered a lot of people the role. James Caan, Robert Redford famously turned it down. But Christopher Reeve was just this skinny kid. He had brown hair, and he actually wore a sweater to appear bigger. And they really liked his audition, but they thought he was too skinny. And they wanted to put a suit on him, but he went, no, 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 I'll get the muscle. And in between filming, hold on. Just keep recapping the movie with Lois Lane, who, by the way, it was either Margot Kidder or Stockard Channing.
No fucking way.
Stockard Channing was the runner-up.
Riso?
Yes.
Oh my god. That would have been so cool, but I still like Margot Kidder, though. I was like, god damn it, I did not know that. He got me surprised right there.
Oh yeah. So Christopher Reeve did a physical exercise regime headed by David Prowse. He's the guy that was Darth Vader in the suit. And he went from 188 pounds to 212 pounds during pre-production and filming. He got so big, he gained so much muscle that they actually had to reshoot a lot of scenes in order for continuity.
Yeah, wow.
And the suit didn't really do him much. But, I mean, there is a difference. He is very, you know, physically big. And I love that Lois Lane, despite being a great reporter, they gave her the quirk of her not being able to spell.
It's an interesting quirk, though, even though she's a Nobel Prize winner.
There's no Z in Brazier, or there's only one P in Rapist.
Yes.
And we get Perry White, who is just like the hard ass chief and editor of the Daily Planet, and he's great. Jackie Cooper.
And I was like, whoa, you have to welcome Clark Kent. And I was like, whoa. I was like, I love the moment that he started, like, I need you to get to open this bottle. And I was like, and Clark cannot do it. And I was like, I love that she shakes it a little bit. And then Clark opens it and it spills. And then Perry White says that only he pays $40 a week for Jimmy Olsen. I was like, damn. In the 70s. I was like, and I love that Clark shows, I was like, he sends half of his pictures to his ma. And then I put it in my line, in my notes, this will not happen in this economy.
Let me guess, his gray-haired old mom, he sends part of his paycheck to his gray-haired old mother. Actually, she's silver-haired.
Silver-haired.
And, also, and he's Clark Kent. He's tall, he's bumbling, clumsy. His voice is a little bit higher. He sort of slouches a little bit, and he slicks his hair.
I love the difference that Christopher Reeve does for us to be like, oh, there are two different people.
Oh, yeah. Complete opposites. Mm-hmm. And people are like, oh, how come they can't see through a pair of glasses? It's more than that.
It's more than
and
that.
And it's like, real. Some of those quirks. It happens.
Mm-hmm.
I had a friend that from college who I didn't recognize because I didn't see through a pair of glasses. Like, it's real. It's or like Zoe Deschanel without bangs, or like two completely different people. People like to crap on it, but I'm like, you would have fallen for it.
Yeah, you would have fallen for it. And then we get into when they go, they're Clark and Lois, they're walking, and then they get into gunpoint. Mugging an alley. I was like, don't point that at me, says Lois.
I love the way that the guy points the gun just over the head, right out in the open. Just puts a gun out in the open.
And then pulls him into the alley. Yeah.
It's so ridiculous and cartoony. Yes.
And I was like, don't point at me. Yeah, you cannot solve the world, this world's problems with guns. I was like, yeah, that's a very Superman line. Give the purse to him, Lois. And I love that Lois was like, being Lois Lane. She just drops it. And then the guy shoots, and then we just see Clark with his hand, but Lois doesn't notice. Lois thinks that he shot Clark.
And then yeah, but like, he runs off, and then he's just like, oh, I must have fainted, Lois. I mean, do you really think that it's worth, I forget what
it was. It's worth risking your life for $10 a cracker and a lipstick? How do you knew that?
You just described the exact contents of my purse. Decent guess. And also when
I love the moment that he smiles to the camera when he shows the bullet, like a little.
Oh yeah, it's in his hand because he caught it faster than a speeding bullet. Which I never pieced that together until years later. I was like, oh, okay.
And also because I remember when they made that nod to the scene in Wonder Woman with Gal Gadot when she catches also the
bullet. Oh, that was a direct, like, Wonder Woman took a lot from this movie.
Oh yeah,
like
the first Wonder Woman. They did.
Oh, and while they're hailing a taxi, then we get this heavyset man played by Ned Beatty, the late Ned Beatty. And he's got this dopey music with the tubas and everything. Mm-hmm. And I love that he tries to steal a newspaper. The dog is like, rah, 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 to like a blind guy. Mm-hmm. And then these two agents are tailing him. And we find out his name is Otis. And he's an assistant for the greatest criminal mind of the 21st century, Lex Luthor, played brilliantly by Gene Hackman.
Gene Hackman.
He is so campy.
Yes, he is. He's loving this.
But he's also, he has that brazen, I'm better than you attitude that's associated with Lex Luthor. And he is also very smart. Which I always love that Superman's greatest enemy is just a man. You know, a superpowered alien that can do almost anything is his greatest enemy is just a mortal man. There's something that's so cool about that.
Also, the thing that they say about the hero's journey, the villain is always the opposite side of the hero.
He is. And if Lex Luthor had those powers, he would have been what everybody says Superman is now, which is like a tyrant. And everybody likes to do evil Superman with like Homelander and Omni-Man, Brightburn, all that stuff. But I don't think that's what makes him so good. He has all the power in the world. And what does he do? He chooses to do good. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. It's always, superheroes always have the choice.
Mm-hmm.
To use their powers. They don't have to do anything. They're not obligated. But Superman feels like he has that power. Anyway, he ends up killing one of the guys because the entrance is in a subway. And he pushes the door. Like too far. And he like pushes him in front of an ongoing train. Kind of dark.
Yeah. And I'm like, even when I saw this, I was like, I don't remember seeing this scene when I was a kid. I was like, maybe my version was edited. I was like, because I don't remember seeing this scene. And also, I like the design of Lex's place because it feels like an abandoned library / abandoned subway stuff. Feels like a mini version of Grand Central Station from New York. And also because I told Bill, I was like, the design of it reminds me of the abandoned subway station from Beneath the Planet of the Apes when the humans worship the missile. And also because this movie involves a missile. And
it involves two missiles.
Missiles, true. I was like, sick. Oh, then we get an introduction of Miss
Tessmacher, yeah.
Tessmacher, thank you. For me, that's a big one name for me. The Mrs. Tessmacher. It's like, so you're sick, Lex. You're really sick. When I'm discussed to be the greatest crime of the century, I'm gifted. I'm outstanding. I was like, why, Lex? Why you label so many people die for your crime? I was like, we're going to be involved in the greatest real estate move of all time.
Yeah. He's like, my father, who once told me that even if governments and economies collapse, people will still need land and will do anything to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, then he has a point. Otis arrives. And then he's, well, he's an idiot.
Yeah.
But he also, he's looking at the Daily Planet, where it's two nuclear, or as Gene Hackman says, nuclear, cruise-type missiles with hypersonic speed. They're going to be tested.
Nuclear.
With live multi-megaton warheads. Essentially, these are nuclear missiles. ICBMs, and then he wants to do a real estate scheme. Oh boy. But while that's happening, Lois is supposed to fly via the Daily Planet's helicopter because apparently this news station or this newspaper has
a budget for a helicopter.
Yeah, to get to the airport to greet Air Force One.
Mm-hmm.
But on the helipad, the chopper, it gets caught on a cable.
Mm-hmm.
And so Lois is hanging on
her destination.
Very final destination. So she's hanging off her dear life over the side of a building. And everyone, of course, is watching like, oh my gosh, no. And so what does Clark do? He goes
and
out.
And we focus a lot on the zooms of her reactions. And also, I love how Richard Donner is doing the tension of how this helicopter is slipping little by little. And the people are screaming, oh my God, oh my God. And I love this little joke when Superman sees the shoe. It's like, oh no. And then he immediately runs and he sees a phone, but it's not a phone booth. It's just a regular phone all of a sudden on the street. It's like, damn.
Yeah,
it.
And he's like, nah. Because in the Golden Age of comics, he would often just change into Superman in a phone booth.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be impossible because you have no room in a phone booth.
Yeah.
If you ever saw that one Deadpool short, you know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And then he, of course, does the iconic shirt rip into the mm-hmm. camera, and he changes in a revolving door with a pimp on the outside, a very stereotypical kind of racist depiction of a pimp. Damn, son, that's a mad outfit. And he's like, excuse me. And his whole demeanor changes. He's standing up straight. He's smiling. He's confident.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the wave of his hair with the one big split curl. And
then I know he how goes he can up. Do the curl while he's changing. Yeah.
Yeah, and he flies up there and grabs Lois, and he's like, "Easy, miss, I've got you. You've got me. Who's got you?" And then they're like, "Oh my god, I can't believe it," because obviously everybody would be like, "Holy shit, somebody is flying. What is this?" Mm-hmm. And then the helicopter is about to go off the side of a building, and what happens? Grabs the helicopter, and everyone is cheering with one hand, and then everyone's cheering and is like, "Yeah!" Because you know,
Marvel,
he
did it first, then Captain America. Mm-hmm.
And then he drops Lois off on the helipad and goes, "I hope this experience hasn't put you off from flying. Statistically speaking, it's still the safest way to travel."
Still the safest way to travel. I love that.
And she's just in shock. She's just like, "Oh, all right." And then goes, "Wait, who are you?" And he goes, "A friend." "All right, bye."
And then she faints.
But that right there is Superman. He's a friend.
And then we see a robber trying to like scale kind of like a part of a building, like in Mission Impossible 4 with the little like things that stick. And then Superman.
Yeah, the suction cups.
He's just waiting for him. Like, standing up completely in front of him, and he's like, "Oh, a guy on all fours like this." And I love his, like, the way that he crosses his arms. I was like, "What are you doing?" And then he stops him, grabs him. "Here you go, sir. He steal all of this money." And then he says, "Come," and then he leaves. And then we see a hit and run.
Like, yeah, so basically he starts stopping crime and, you know, being Superman.
I love that the guy that tries to, like, to hit him with a crowbar, the crowbar's like
on the boat.
Yeah, on the boat.
They manage to escape onto a boat and everything, and then he just goes, "Bad vibrations."
Yes, and then Superman saves a cat from a tree, staple from the comics.
Literally, the save the cat moment.
Yes, and then
the cop from earlier was just like, "I'm telling you, it's a guy in red boots and he can fly." And they're like, "Okay, someone's been drinking a little bit too much. We'll just go back over there." And then he gets the entire yacht with all of them right in front of the police station. And then the other cop is just like, "First round's on me."
Mm-hmm. And then we see the Air Force One flying in lightning. And then all of a sudden, while lightning strike destroys a whole wing of the Air Force One, and then I was like, "No, my God, we're gonna fall," and everything. And then Superman comes, and then he joins on the wing that is still missing to help the flight to arrive. I was like, "What happened?" And one of the birds that's like, "Don't look, just fly." And then I'm gonna say this.
Oh yeah, I still also love this a lot.
This is the same fucking night.
I think so.
Yeah, and, this feels like this
during
night.
During the save the cat moment, the girl goes back inside and is like, "Mommy, a man flew and saved the cat from the tree." And then you just hear, "Haven't I told you not to tell any lies?" And then you hear a slap. I'm like, did she just get slapped? What the hell?
Yes, she did. And then I'm like, so technically it was the same night. I love how you focus on all of the people telling on the news. And I love one of the headlines when Perry's showing all of the papers. "Look, Ma, no wires."
Or no, "Look, Ma, no wings."
Yeah, no. They said no wires.
Still, but he's just like, "We need to have a conversation with this guy. This is the most important thing since God talked to Moses." And then there's a scene in the special edition that was cut from the theatrical release.
Okay.
And it's very important. It involves Jor-El when he goes back to the fortress, because he also, specifically in that version, he expressly forbade Clark from using his powers. And he said, "Okay, so you've chosen to reveal yourself to the world. Fine. I can't stop you," because he said, "It's forbidden for you to interfere in human history." And he said, "But you will need to have a secret identity. And this is for a couple of reasons. Number one, you would always be called upon to fix everything, even if humans could do it themselves. And you would be on call 26 hours or a day, or 24 in Earth terms. Number two, your enemies would find out who you are and they would hurt the people that matter most to you. And then number three, you would need it mostly just for privacy reasons. So he's like, okay, fine, you interfered in human history, you're revealed, but you're not going to reveal who you are, like who your alter ego is. You're going to be two separate things. And he said, and he was like, man, I wish you were here, or I wish I was there to show you just how proud I was and to hold you in my arms, my son. And you even see, like, Christopher Reeve, he, like, reaches out towards the hologram and stuff because, yeah, you often forget he is alone. He's the last survivor of his race. And that's got to weigh heavily on him, but he still has powers and is doing good.
And that is a really cool moment. I also was like,
but they cut that from the theatrical release.
Scene. Yeah, well, now I want to see that scene. And then, so we see Lois in her apartment, and then she's like, and then we Superman arrives. So I was like, do you don't smoke, Miss Lane? I was like, yeah, you're gonna say they're gonna get lung cancer, and then Superman checks her
lungs with his X-ray lungs, vision.
And I was like, and she says, not yet. It's like, oh, and then she turns off the cigarette. I was like, you're married? No. You got a girlfriend? No. But Miss Lane, you will be the first one to know. I was like, hey!
This is where we get, like, the playful, witty banter of him.
Like,
because
playful Superman.
He's like, tall. He's confident.
225. Yeah.
His actual weight and height. Which is crazy. And just, he had a great smile and these piercing blue eyes. Like, that were so inviting, and he was, like, when he smiled, it was like, it was like, you feel safe with this guy, but also, you're like, yeah, I see why you were Superman, very handsome man, which makes it all the more sad about what happened in real life with the accident of, so if you guys didn't know, he fell off of a horse, and he broke his spine, and it made him a quadriplegic for the rest of his life. So he couldn't use his arms or his legs. It sucks that somebody like a guy that played Superman could fall like that. But it didn't let him down, like, too much. He was alive for longer than he should have been.
Mm-hmm. And also, I love, I was like, and see through, you can see through everything. I was like, and so, like, yes. I was like, what is my underwear? Like, well, I cannot see right now because you're in, like, in this thing on lead. I was like, so you cannot see through lead. I was like,
no, it's lead line.
Because she's lead line, because there was a lead line and there was, like, some plants and some roses, and then she moves a little bit, and then he says, pick underwear.
And Lois is completely smitten. She looks good, too, with, like, her, whatever her night attire is.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just like, do you like pink? And he goes, I like pink very much, Lois.
And then, why are you here? I'm here to fight for the true justice in the American way. I never lie, Lois.
Yeah, I love that she goes, you're going to be fighting every politician ever. But yeah, I never lie, which that is important for later.
Mm-hmm.
And then
I was like, have you ever time how fast you can fly?
Because she also gets the details of, like, he's from the planet Krypton. He's the last known person of that race, a couple galaxies away. And he's like, oh, I don't know.
That he was born in 1948.
Hmm. Yeah, and he just goes, you want to fly with me? And she's like, what? He's like, yeah, really? Mm-hmm. We'll take a flight. She's just like, Clark says that you're a figment of an imagination, like Peter Pan or something. Clark, is that like your boyfriend? Or no, Clark, he's a friend. Peter Pan was fairy tales, and he flew with children, Lois. And then we get, no other word to describe it, but cinema.
It is cinema. The way that they're flying, going through all of New York, And I love what Margot Kidder is saying. I was like,
well, Metropolis, but still.
Metropolis, sorry. I'm holding hands with a god. I'm quivering like a girl. Can you see through me? Can you picture the things that I'm thinking? You can fly. You belong in the sky. You need a friend. I'm the one that you can fly to. I was like, damn.
Okay, I'm going to actually say I hate this voiceover. It was not like it? Needed. The can you read my mind? It's iconic. And I'm glad it's there, but in the context, it's like, what does it really add?
I think the romance saying, between both of them, though.
Yeah, and even Richard Donner said, if I could redo it, I wouldn't have done it like that.
But I don't mind, but I get why you don't like it. I get it.
It's very 70s.
It's very 70s, dude. I do admit that, though.
With, like, but the voiceovers like it, and stuff. I love, like, when they're flying.
I'm a romantic.
And she's just looking at him the entire time. And I love how when they fly, it's just like a light breeze. I mean, even...
It feels like they're doing the Peter Pan moment.
Yeah, and the wire work is very good. Mm-hmm. Like, the flying scenes. I mean, mm-hmm. obviously you can tell. But it's still, for the most part, it holds up pretty well.
Yes.
I mean, for 1978, it still holds up really well. This was revolutionary for films. They didn't really have these special effects. And, I mean, even the tagline of this movie is, you'll believe a man can fly. And for a lot of people, that's what happened. And I love that during the flight, she gradually gets, holds on less and less.
One or two fingers.
Yes. I love that when he holds her hand to, like, they're holding on by the tips of her fingers, and he just holds by a thumb, and, like, arms spread out in the air. That's just awesome. And then she even falls down, and he just swoops her back up, arms around him, and the height difference really plays there, because he's big and tall, jet black hair, and... They go back, and then she's like, good night. And he just flies over, and he comes back as Clark. That's super speed.
It is very good super speed. And then we see that Lex and Mrs. The Miss and the other guy, they're reading the paper. It was like, and it says, I spend the night with Superman. I was like, he's 6'4", black hair, doesn't wrinkles more. He doesn't feel like he's from this planet.
And he always tells the truth.
And he always tells the truth. And then they read about the thing about 1948. And I was like, and then Lex was like, there's something that has to be, something that happened around when he arrived. I was like, the 3 years, maybe there's some debris of his ship or anything. I was like, and then Mr. Tesmark was like, meteorites. Something that we could harm him. And then they go into the deduction of the kryptonite.
Yeah, what they're kryptonite saying that. They're
covering lead. He couldn't see him.
Yeah, so they theorized that bits of his planet must have came with him.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to us, it's just harmless green meteorite. But for him, it would be basically radioactive.
Mm-hmm.
And it would weaken him. So yeah, Lex has the idea, we'll put a thing of kryptonite in lead, because we know that he can't see through lead. Thanks to this article, which is also kind of stupid. It's like you're saying, hey, I can't do this. Of course, your enemies are going to use this against you. This expose.
I was going to complain about that, too. Why the hell, Superman, you said that on the interview? You should have not leaked that.
But that's also one of the complaints about Superman is that, oh, he's invulnerable. He can't be weakened. That's why we have kryptonite. And there are other ways he can be weakened, too. Kryptonite's the most famous one.
Mm-hmm.
And there are even different types of kryptonite, too. But it's typically, it's the green rock, which people will say, if you simplify it, it sounds really stupid. But everybody needs a weakness. Otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah, and then we see...
another moment after the flying scene... That I love. It's like 5 seconds. But when he's Clark and Lois changes real quick, and I mean, she doesn't really change, but she's getting a coat. And He takes off his glasses. He goes up straight and he transforms into Superman right there. He went from Clark Kent to Superman in the span of like 5 seconds. And he even goes, you know, Lois, I got something to tell you. And then he thinks better of it, puts the glasses on. And he's just like, well, I just thought, you know, gosh darn it, I'm going to show her a good time, because his voice is much higher as well. And it's, you're like, yeah, these two are not the same people. Anyway.
Yeah, that is a very good detail. I do like that too.
Back to Lex.
And then we see that Lex does this whole heisting of him wearing that different wig. And
oh yeah, every single scene, every new scene that he is in, he has a different hairstyle.
Mm-hmm.
Showing the bald twist right away. Because yes, in the comics, Lex Luthor, infamously, trademark of the character, he's bald.
Yes.
And he in the original comics, he lost it in a fire when Superman was Superboy at the time.
Oh.
It's very golden age. But yeah.
Okay.
They have to... Well, you describe this.
Yeah, he's stealing some missiles. Miss Tessmacher pretends to be a woman that she was in a car crash, even though the car crashing by via remote, like a drone. And then because Mr. Otis, he destroyed the car, and I was like, no, that was not the right one, you idiot. And then this felt very cartoony for me. How the hell did they get new costumes and a new truck in less than like maybe like an hour, like to go to stumble into the same missiles? I'm like, and then when you said that thing about Golden Age, I was like, yeah, I get it. And then they finally do it. They get the coordinates. They do the missiles to get the right coordinates. And then we see Lois in California. She's soon to be interviewing a Native American about some people that bought the land. I was like, well, why you do it? Why, who you bought it from? I was like, we just needed to get rid of this land. As we see that Clark goes to Perry. And then in the office of the Daily Planet, he hears a horrible noise that you hear, like those weird whistles that to control a dog. Like,
yeah, a dog whistle.
Like a dog whistle. I was like, only you and animals with four legs can hear this, Superman. I'm going to release. That's the thing. I couldn't hear a lot, though, because my version of the movie, like, we was stumbling with the subtitles. I don't think he said, I'm going to release a poisonous gas through all of Metropolis or
that's exactly missile. What he said. No, a gas. Okay. And the whole land scheme, Perry sends Lois and Jimmy to investigate it. And then also Perry shares a story about a worthless meteorite being stolen from an Ethiopian museum. Because that's where it landed. Yes. And that's where we get only Superman and the dogs can hear that. Yes. And then he goes outside. And he jumps out a window, and then he magically just transforms into Superman. That was a moment where I just went, what? Come on. Like, nothing. It just fades into Superman. He just
chased, yeah.
Midair.
And then I love how Superman becomes a drill. I do like that a lot, though. Like, how he turns into a drill, like, to get into Lex Luthor's place.
Oh, yeah, because he knows it's underground, so he's just like, stay back, nothing to fear, and then he just...
Mm-hmm.
Goes down underground,
and then
and since he's Superman,
destroys the metal door, and was like, "Oh, come in," says Lex Luthor. I was like, "Also, my attorney will contact you about the door." I'm like, "That is a very Lex Luthor line." I was like, "I'm unlike you." I was like, "But what are you doing, Luthor?" I was like, "I'm unlike yours. Gets his kicks by hurting people. Why?" I was like, "Have you heard Superman about the San Andreas fault? All of this land before the San Andreas fall is sold by Lex Luthor Corp. Let's say if a missile comes, then Superman's like, people will perish. Yes, but then that will be a new West Coast.
Yeah, because if you detonate the San Andreas fault at a certain point,
it will activate it.
It will destroy half the entire Eastern Seaboard and it'll fall right into the sea.
Mm-hmm. And then it will do Costa de Lex. Lex Springs, Tessmacher Peaks, and then Otisburg. Why Otisburg?
It was Lutherville, but then it's just crossed out in marker and it says Otisburg, and he just goes, Otisburg. Oh yeah, Mr. Luthor, I just thought I'd have like just a small piece. No, and also in the special edition, how he gets into Lex's hideout, he was attacked by a wall of machine guns, a wall of fire, and a wall of liquid nitrogen, and none of them have any effect, obviously.
That would have been a cool sequence to see.
It's in the special edition.
Nice, nice, nice. I'm going to look that up.
And then when that happens, so he needs two of them because one is going to detonate in the San Andreas Fault and destroy the land. The other one is just used as a cover because he's like, even you with your great speed can't get both of them. And then I think of how it should have ended where he's just like, wait, let me just... Are these the missiles that you're talking about? You said I possibly couldn't get them. And it also creates a plot hole with the ending of this movie, which there is a lot of reasons why the resolution is probably the biggest problem, but like logically.
Okay.
But he's just like, even if he can bring down both, he can detonate either warhead via the remote. And he's like, all right, where's the remote? And Lex is sitting on the lead box. And he baits him into opening that box. And he's just like, no, don't open that. And then, of course, it's the chunk of kryptonite on a chain. And he just goes, I told you not to open it.
And immediately, I love that he had it ready to be like a necklace. I like
it. And it immediately starts affecting him. And he's getting all woozy. And he can barely stand. It's basically like if we had a rod of like uranium or something without any protection, that would mess us up.
And I love when he's like, I got myself a souvenir, I spare no expense. And I'm like, Lex Luthor did it first. I spare no expense. And then he puts the necklace on top of him at his weakest, and then he just pushes him into the pool. And then we just see Superman just trying to like try to get out of the water because the kryptonite is weakening him. I was seeing Miss Tessmacher was like looking from afar, and then she's just stumbling. She's like, "Oh, what am I doing?" And she's just looking Superman.
Oh, yeah, because it was going to Hackensack, New Jersey, because Otis messed up the programming. And then Miss Tessmacher is just like, "Lex, my mother lives in Hackensack," and he just gestures to his wrist like a watch, and he just shakes his head like, "Not anymore." And then
Superman, as he's driving, said, Miss, you cannot stand there. You will let a million people die. And I was like, if I'll save you, will you save my mother first? I know that you cannot lie. Yes, I promise. And then we see that Miss Tessmacher jumps into the water, carries him, like, takes him to a corner of the pool. And then she first kisses him and then takes off the necklace. And then she throws the kryptonite necklace into the sewer. And I was like, why did you kiss me? Because I thought you were not going to let me kiss you before. And then I love how they both kind of like smile. I was like, come on, move a little bit. I have to leave. And then
somehow he dries miraculously quick. And then, of course,
I was going to say this. I was like, it's surprising that he didn't went to the sun to recharge, though.
It's true. But then he actually does not, or he goes over the one, he tries to stop the first missile that's heading towards New Jersey over Kansas, but he dodges him and he forces it into space, but he can't get the second missile as it detonates the San Andreas Fault and it sets off an earthquake. And it's very similar to the destruction of Krypton.
Yes.
And we see also a lot of miniatures. There's a dam that is breaking. Jimmy's on the dam and he's hanging on for dear life. He gets saved.
I love that Superman goes to the Earth's core.
I love that he's also just like, stay here, son. Yeah, Superman goes into the core of the Earth to keep it from collapsing.
And then I also like the San Francisco Golden Gate Bridge, like, destroying itself little by little, and you see that bus, and there's two scenes that come into my head. Magneto attacking the Golden Gate Bridge, and that horrible Terminator Genesis bus almost at the edge of the Golden Gate Bridge. I was like, God damn it.
So he managed to keep the Earth from collapsing, but the aftershocks are still providing problems.
And also he saves the train as pretending him being part of the rail. I do like that thing because he's the Man of Steel. I see what you did there.
Mm-hmm. And also they mention, you know, birds flying. He's a big blue bird.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a bird. It's a plane. He saves a plane. Or, you know, look up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. No, it's Superman. Mm-hmm.
And then
Lois gets a
brutal... We see that Lois has no fuel. Yeah.
And her car just ends up going into a conveniently placed crack. And she's buried alive.
Yeah.
And it's pretty brutal, too. She's like, Superman eventually senses that she's in danger. And then he pulls out of the ground.
After he saves that little neighborhood. Yeah.
Yeah, because he's trying to do everything all at once. And it's, again, it's that even though he has all this power, he can't save everyone. Because Lois dies.
Everyone. Mm-hmm.
And then...
Yeah, she's dead.
That's the dark. Acting from Christopher Reeve is so good. Where he plays that anguish and just...
Like, confusion as he carries her. And then how he, like shakes a little bit first and then he goes like... Nah!
And then he flies off, and then comes the dumbest part of this movie, where, I get it. It's because he couldn't save his father, but he can save Lois, and he flies so fast that eventually he reverses the planet's rotation, and it reverses time. So he is able.
If I could turn back time.
And then he fixes it in the same direction, though.
I love that he first goes a little back, and then it's like he goes a little bit forward, like just for him not to do the dam again, just to save Lois.
Yeah, he turns back the Earth's rotation and pulls back time. And then he saves Lois before her car is buried. And then... There's a couple things wrong with this. Number one, reversing the Earth will not pull back time. That would not do anything. If anything, that would probably destroy the Earth if we're going in the different direction.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, if he's so fast that he can turn the Earth's rotation back, he would be fast enough to catch both missiles.
Yes, that is a plot hole right there. I can see that why.
Mm-hmm. Third, why hasn't he done this before?
Before.
He can solve so many problems like, you know, oh, I didn't get that. Reverse the Earth, right back there.
So he's technically faster than the Flash.
In terms of flying, we know that Superman is one of the fastest superheroes. For sure. Yes. He's not the fastest, but he is one of. And it does create a lot of plot holes, but you don't care. This is a Silver Age comic book come to life. Ridiculous stuff like this happened all the time. I mean, if I told you some of the stuff that happened, you would not believe me. You're like, is this guy for real? But yeah, it really did. And then, well, that happens.
Superman drops Luthor and Otis to the jail.
Yep, he literally just flies them into the jail without any trial. And, of course, Luthor is shouting. Much like
the wig. Yeah.
Yeah, much like Zod in the opening. So it's actually kind of a full circle moment. But he's interrupted by Otis. And then they're just like, get away. But we also see that he pulls the wig off. And he's just like, Lex Luthor, the greatest criminal mind of the 20th century. And then they're all just like, oh, another day saved. Thanks to you, Superman. He's just like, no, thanks to you. And he's like, well, good night. Flies off into the sunset.
The classic staple, him waking at the screen, just smiling.
Yeah, no, he flies into space. He smiles at the camera, winks, and just flies off as the theme plays.
God, what a good movie.
Sweet.
I'm still, I saw this movie when I was 6 years old, I'm still trying to remember if I saw this on like my mother, if I rented it in a video store, I saw it in Spanish first on the TV. But watching this movie, I was just smiling like a damn dumb kid. So hearing that theme, seeing Christopher Reeve, all of these iconic characters. And also, it has a special place in my heart because this was the first superhero movie I ever saw. This was the first superhero I ever knew. Batman, Spider-Man, I knew Superman was first.
I mean, his name is Superman. Mm-hmm. Can't get any more like original than that. And this is really the grandfather of all the modern superhero movies, if you really think about it.
Also, I'm thankful that I got to see this one first.
So yeah, that was Superman.
So yeah, that was the movie. Yeah, this was the first movie I ever saw. Like, the first superhero movie I ever saw, period. Like, this was the first superhero I ever knew. And it's still very special to me. Like, I was smiling like a damn kid throughout this whole movie. And I'm like, I love this movie. Even, yeah, it has plot holes. And I don't care about him turning back time. I mean, like, it's a staple for me. But I liked it, though. It's a very good damn movie, and I still like it a lot. I technically have no big problems with the movie, though. I do like it a lot, though. Like, maybe a little bit of pacing, though, but that's it. But Christopher Reeve is still so damn good. I can see why it's a staple of him, like, following Superman. But also, I agree, Superman, the character, should evolve. Like, to have different interpretations of him. But maybe that's why, because Christopher Reeve's performance was so strong, that's why people want to... This is the Superman that they see in their heads.
But yeah, I fully agree with you. This is what got me into superheroes. The movie is great. Richard Donner directed a heck of a movie. Does it have problems? Hell yeah, it's got problems. And it is very much dated. But that's also part of its charm. It's sort of this time capsule of sort of this golden/silver age tribute. There's a lot of small nods and Easter eggs, but mostly it's just a very solid, simple story with a sincere and heartfelt direction. And really, everybody brings their A game. This is why when everybody thinks of Superman, this is the version they think of for a reason. So yeah, completely biased, because also Superman is my favorite superhero. But, you know what? 9 out of 10. Only because of the setup with Zod. Because you need to see Superman 2 in order for that to pay off. Because this was really a two-part story. But as a movie on its own, really solid. Shows that,
is timeless. I'll give this movie a 9 out of 10 too. Just because of the pacing.
Yeah, next week, it's going to be interesting because we're talking technically two movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking about Superman 2, arguably a better movie than Superman 1. Both the theatrical Richard Lester cut and the famous Donner cut, which a lot of it was just re-edited footage that Richard Donner did. Yes, two different
movies.
And we'll go through that whole production and stuff next week. But until then, where can the good people find you, buddy?
You can find me as always at RobertRDC on Twitter, Instagram, and on Letterboxd at RobertRDC. Please follow the podcast on SmyNSpot on Twitter. Give us a nice review on Apple, Spotify, and the other ones. And you, Billy?
Yes, you can follow me on Twitter and Letterboxd at MasterOfPuns196. Every word starts with a capital letter. You can also follow me on Instagram at BillyBatsonsLightning. Nothing is capitalized. Once again, you can follow the main show Twitter at SYNSPod, as well as give us a 5-star review on Apple. And just listen to us on Apple, as well as Google, Spotify for podcasters, wherever podcasts can be listened to. And as always,
see you next summer. Dun, 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 dun.